The Dead Show, the Muppet Podcast.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live.
Welcome to Dead Show of the Month Live. It's me, I'm your old friend Dave, and we are here to discuss the Grateful Dead and all things related to it. And we got a special topic for y'all today. So what is Dead Show of the Month Live? We're here to mostly discuss our monthly podcast, which we'll get into in a few moments. I keep saying we. I, of course, am talking about my oftentimes co-pilot, my fellow intrepid traveler, the Jedi Master to my Padawan learner. Of course, I'm talking about my co-host, Bob. How are you doing today, sir?
Yeah, I'm fine, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing really well. We're live, man. This is a whole different thing.
Yeah. I'm sure there's just as many listeners as there are, like, when they can listen to it anytime. Maybe not. Yes.
It'll come. So it'll come. And what we'll do is record this, and we'll post it on our normal podcast page, and we'll show all the people who didn't tune in how cool it was.
Yeah, it's a brilliant marketing device because we'll make millions off of this one.
Yeah, that's our goal, as always, making millions of dollars off of our podcast.
No, I meant millions of fans.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah. Money and fans are what it's all about, definitely. So myself and Bob host a monthly podcast here on Podbean called Dead Show of the Month. We post that on the first of every month. We play a lot of live Grateful Dead music. That's the forte. That's what our podcast is all about, is live Grateful Dead music. So accordingly, since we usually have pre-recorded studio banter with live music, now we have live studio banter with studio recorded music. So I figured that would be cool. But you guys, we will attract listeners from Podbean into this who are not Deadheads, possibly. Mm. And you guys should really check out our show. We play a whole Grateful Dead show. We have halftime music presented by my co-host Bob, which is pretty awesome. And we do interviews, and occasionally we get some big ones, and hopefully we can get one of our most enlightening guests on here with us sometime. That would be awfully cool. I would really dig that.
Yeah, well, you know, actually there's a couple of pretty nice interviews we've done here, Dave, and, you know, Rob Barocco and Sam Cutler, our friend Mike from, you know, our favorite book.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been a lot of guests and really special stuff, I think.
Yeah, we've done well for ourselves. For just a little old podcast, it's been pretty cool.
Yep.
Yeah, always interesting. Nice. Yeah, always interesting. So that's what we're doing. But our biggest hope is that this would be an interactive program, a way to really tune in with our fan base. We've got thousands of listeners to our monthly podcast, which is awfully cool. And we would love to interact with them live, which is always a cool thing. So for you guys who want to interact, you can use the chat box, which is okay, I guess. Or you can hit that little phone button at the bottom of your screen, which will have you call in, and you'll be on with myself and Bob, which would be really, really cool, I would think. I would want to be on my show if I wasn't on my show already.
Yeah. Well, and Dave talked me into being on his show. And but what a fun thing it is. We get to listen to all these different shows over time, back and forth, and kind of some of them we've shared together and some we just, you know, aren't all at because they're, you know, historically relevant. But yeah, good times. And I think there's somebody out there who wants to talk, Dave.
Oh, yeah. We got people lined up already, which is pretty cool. We got some people who are already ready to talk to us. But let's get to the meat of the podcast today, which is going to be, since it's our first time doing a live show, we figured we would go ahead and ask our listeners to call in and let us know about their first live show with the Grateful Dead, hopefully, but it doesn't matter. You could go all the way back to the Fillmore West in 69 or Europe in 1962. It doesn't really matter when you saw the Grateful Dead or even if you've been able to see the Grateful Dead. But what we're looking for today is interaction with you, the fan base. I know me and Bob have seen the Grateful Dead. We definitely have first show stories, and we'll do our best to get you to those. But we really want to hear from you guys. So if you're out there, if you're listening, hit that call button, send in a text into the chat box. We will get your story up there. We'd prefer you to tell it, of course, but we'll get there, right? First shows can be really a really cool story. You know, Bob, the first time at the Grateful Dead can be pretty enlightening for a lot of folks, can be life-changing, as it was in certainly in my case. There's also some not-so-great first Grateful Dead show stories out there, and hopefully we don't get too many of those.
Yeah, well, yeah, we'll hope to harvest only the happy ones. But, you know, it's an experience, and if they're actually calling in to talk about it now, that means they probably went back and had the other experience of, you know, enjoying the music and getting to know their fellow, you know, crowd and making that family over time.
Yeah, because it is kind of a big family. You can run into somebody at a liquor store almost and start chatting with them. And before you know it, you guys have been some of the same places. It's pretty cool. It's an interesting thing that we've carved out here, that they've allowed us to carve out. These Grateful Dead guys. We do have a caller, Bob.
Well.
We have our first ever caller to our live show. Let's go ahead and welcome in Gus from Pittsburgh. Gus, welcome to the Dead Show of the Month live.
Hey, guys. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you perfectly. How's it going, Gus?
It's going good. How have you guys been? Haven't talked to you for a long time.
Yeah, it's interesting, Bob. I got to tell you, you know, Gus is one of our first people who emailed me 10 years ago.
I recall.
Yeah, Gus from Pittsburgh. He was on the show a couple of times on our monthly show. I guess he felt the need to call in and discuss his first show, which is always cool. So thanks for calling in. Where and when was your first Grateful Dead show, Gus?
It was April 19th, 1984 in the Philadelphia Civic Center.
That's very cool. I never got to see the Grateful Dead in Philly. I think Bob did, and he's got an interesting story from Philly. We'll maybe someday get to that. But
yeah, I've nearly recovered from that show.
Yeah, there's a lot of venues in Philly, and this was, I think, one of the more rare ones. I know they played 3 shows there in 84. Right. I don't know if they played any other shows there. Do you know, Bob, maybe earlier?
Not at that venue. I really am not familiar with that. I saw them at the Spectrum in like 77, I guess, yeah.
I saw some Spectrum shows, I think, in 85, and I saw them at JFK, too. That they put the CD out. It was with Bob Dylan.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
So I'm curious, Gus, so like you saw him April 19th. What jumps out in your memory from that first show? Is there anything that sticks?
Well, I initially was listening to albums. I didn't even know much about bootlegs and things like that. And then I ended up in this sculpture class at Pitt. And one of my friends that I made in that class was actually a fairly famous taper on the East Coast. And he said, no, you got to come to a live show. So he gave me my first bootlegs. So I went to the show with him. And it was probably the best experience I had because we stayed in a Hilton hotel right across the street. I had my own bed. Generally not, you know, the usual atmosphere for seeing a Grateful Dead concert.
Wow, your own bed.
You know, I've slept in a tent on the side of the road before, slept in my car, whatever. But, you know, this was done, you know, in style a little bit. I racked up my credit card pretty good that weekend. But it was really neat because I had no idea. They told me, look, you have no idea what you're in for. And the closer we got to the hotel, and the hotel was right in the thick of it, that's where all the Shakedown Street was set up. So I had a great time just running around, just taking the whole experience in. And the show actually was quite good. I think it was featured. I was doing some research. The second set was part of the second set was on Dick's Picks 35. And I thought so.
Okay. When you had mentioned that date to me when we had chatted pre-show, I for some reason that date stood out to me. So, Gus, did you have that big bang moment at your first Grateful Dead show, or did it take a few shows for that big moment where you realized this was going to be kind of a lifetime obsession, addiction, whatever you want to call it?
No, I knew right away, even before the concert, because my friend was giving me bootleg tapes, and I was a soccer player, and I actually quit playing soccer and went and saw shows instead. So yeah, but I wasn't, you know, Pitt's 30,000 students. I wasn't one of the best 11 soccer players out of 30,000 people, so that's okay. So this was a great second, you know, activity to do. But it was, I was hooked as soon as, and I had master tapes too. They ran my tape deck for me.
Oh, how cool is that?
So I didn't have to worry about anything. I had, you know, after that, I saw the first two shows, the 19th and the 20th. I had my own tapes, and I was hooked from then till now. So,
you know, that's really weird to me, because I saw my first show in May of 1990. I saw the second night or day of a two-day run, and it never occurred to me to go to both shows. And it sounds like your first show was really a first weekend.
It was. I think it was a Thursday, Friday, if I remember correctly.
Oh, that's cool.
I didn't go to the last show. I went and visited one of my high school friends at his college that was nearby for the last night. And I wish I would have gone, because that was a good one too.
Oh, that's interesting. So I was going to ask you, one of the questions I had for our callers was going to be, when did you go to your second Dead show? But it was just the next night for you, so that kind of wiped that out. You were hooked. You're lucky. Yeah. I got hooked my first time, but it was a good long while before I got a second dose of them. And I know Bob has a similar experience to yours. I know he went to two in a row his first time as well. So, yeah, that's kind of cool. You guys are lucky, man. Yeah.
I did good the first year. I saw seven shows, I think, the first year. That's the most I saw in any one year.
Oh, wow. That's you got bit hard.
Yeah, it was fun. But you know what? I had my group of friends, they were all deadheads. A lot of them were tapers. So we would go out and see, you know, different bands on the weekends. We had a really good Grateful Dead cover band at Pitt at that time that would play at a local bar. So we, you know, it just was, that was the group of friends that I was in. So you could always jump into somebody's car and go whenever you wanted. So wow. It was great.
Yeah, that wasn't the experience for me. We'll get into my experience a little bit later in the show, especially if we don't have too many folks calling in. We will definitely get to our own personal stories, but in the meantime, it's fun to hear from people and hear what their first times were like, and it sounds like yours was ideal. You enjoyed everything about it. That, you know,
everything was perfect. I mean, it was just a great time the whole weekend. You know what's interesting is, if you look at the three of us, Bob cut his teeth. His first shows were with Keith and Donna, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And mine was with Brent, and yours was with Vince.
No, I saw my first show was a Brent show. And
was it?
He passed away directly pretty close thereafter. So,
okay.
And I couldn't have told you who was playing keyboards. I knew one guy on the stage. We'll get to my story. It's amusing at best, because I, unlike you guys, really knew nothing about the Grateful Dead before I went. And what I did know, I really didn't like. So I'm kind of an interesting story. We'll tell my tale. We'll get there. I promise you.
So when I was there, what I do remember is I was on the floor for a while, but I had to be, you know, you have to, when you're in Taper's Row, you have to kind of mind your P's and Q's, and you have to be quiet, and you can't move around a lot. So I got out of there, and I ended up on this, they had this balcony, or second level, and I was just sitting on the balcony, on the railing. My feet were hanging off the balcony, and I was on the railing, and I was on Jerry's side, right above Brent. I mean, Brent was right down below me, like 20 feet, 30 feet away. And I had like one of the best seats in the house. Nobody was in my way. And I just sat there all night long, dancing, sitting on that railing.
That's awesome. So I've always heard that Philly was a very, very rowdy place to see any concert or do anything. So. I've never saw the Grateful Dead in Philly or anybody else. I've never been to Philly. So my curiosity to you, Gus, and Bob, you're both veterans of Philly shows. Was there more of a rowdy crowd at those shows in Philadelphia?
I think so.
Bob?
It's a rowdy bunch down there for sure. I don't know how to compare, but probably more the Capitol Theater, you know, that where I saw like my first set of shows. You know, it's more of a 3,200 seat old, you know, movie or play type theater, And as opposed to going to one of the larger venues, that, you know, you can get a lot of people into it, and they're selling a lot of beer and all that. So, yeah, I had a hell of a show there. Again, I've, you know, almost recovered from that one. There's a lot of stories.
These were rowdy in a good way, though. I've been to shows when they've been rowdy in a bad way. I remember two shows in Pittsburgh, one at the Civic Arena in 89 and one at Burgettstown, where they were like 150 people overran a fence and just, you know, that was in the latter days when, you know, things just got out of control. Those weren't fun rowdy, but the Philadelphia rowdy was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Lively. Why don't we call them lively instead of rowdy? But
yeah, that's a good term.
So, you know, we're talking about first time. So really, I had seen Keith and Donna Band with Billy on drums open for Kingfish in the Capitol Theater in late 75. And that was really good. Really enjoyed Kingfish. It was, you know, I thought I knew what I was going to see, and I was maybe expecting a little bit of a more of a Dead experience. But I was like, okay, that was good. And then I got to see early show, late show, Jerry Garcia Band in Capitol Theater, April 2nd, 1976. And that was that. That did it all. There was no doubt the bus had come by and it got on. You know, and it was like, you know, Jerry Church kind of stuff people say, but it was unbelievable. So when the Dead came around in June that year after, you know, their hiatus, I got to see the first two shows that they did at the Capitol Theater again. And both shows, great first show. You know, for some reason, I don't know, maybe I was expecting more of a Jerry thing. I don't know. Loved it. But the second show knocked me out. There was a Crazy Fingers in the first set that probably was a 15-minute version, and... you know, from there it was just all gold, you know. So
yeah, you guys are just lucky. That's all I have to say. I didn't go until 1990, and I didn't know anything that I was in for. Honestly, I was completely mentally, emotionally, and physically unprepared for what was about to happen. That's for damn sure. Gus from Pittsburgh, thank you again for all of your support over the years, and thanks again for calling in tonight. You are officially, we're our first official caller into our live show, and I thank you for that, sir.
Excellent. Well, listen, I can't thank you guys enough for filling up my iPod over these years. You know, there's not a minute in my pottery studio that I'm not listening to you guys.
And one, very cool.
You know, and you know, also... I just want to let you know, Bob, in terms of the halftime selections, you know, Freddie, Pink Floyd, Prince, I mean, all these different, it's, you know, Little Feet. I mean, you really.
All of those and more are coming up very soon, actually.
Yeah, I mean.
Thanks, yeah. It's a lot of fun. You know, Dave slags me occasionally because I think I have, like, I don't know, like Carole King and somebody else from London one time. I don't know. So. But, you know, like tonight before we all called in, I was listening to Amy Winehouse just slay it. Big fan of hers. Tom Morello was on this other broadcast I was watching. Just unbelievable. There's so much great music out there. And, you know, halftime is just a little treat like it used to be at Dead shows, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? So I appreciate that. You know, every month I'm listening, I like to... Hey, I wonder what they're going to, you know, I look just as forward to the halftime show as everything else.
Oh, that's cool.
I got to say that Dave probably does about half all that work anyway.
I don't think so.
He makes it all happen. It's just fun to kind of ride along and tell some stories and hear other people's stories like yours, Gus. It's so cool that we're, you know, being able to share this. Really nice.
Yeah. Well, listen, give 419 a listen. It's especially in the second set. There's some really nice parts of that. This is a show, not a rock and roll show. This is a kind of show that if you have a bad day at work, you come home and you put your headphones on and you close your eyes when you listen.
Hey, Gus, you mentioned the pottery studio. Do you got something out there that people can look at? I mean, we're not doing any commercials or nothing, but
Sure, if they're interested, they can go to Facebook. It's Fungus, F-U-N-G-U-S Pottery.
Fungus Pottery. Gosh, that sounds... Do you mind if I go see if I can do it real quick?
Fungus? What are you going to do, Fungus, or are you going to look for his website? Anyway.
It just depends, Dave.
Gus from Pittsburgh, thanks again for calling in. You are always welcome to call us back. We have another caller on the line, actually. We'll get to in a moment here. But pretty cool story there, huh, Bob?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Yeah. And I just bookmarked Fungus Pottery.
Yeah, everybody check out Fungus Pottery on Facebook, and you will check out Gus's fun potteries. I've seen his work over the years. It's actually really cool. Myself and Gus have been Facebook friends for quite some time, and it's been fun, I would assume, on both of our sides to watch our families grow and mature. I know he's got a couple of daughters and a lovely wife, and he enjoys disc golf. So me and Gus have gotten along fairly well over the years digitally, and it's actually very fitting that he was the first caller to our show.
Nice.
But we got another one. We have the second caller to our show, which is going to be my friend and yours, Cousin Darren from Scottsdale, Arizona. He's out there. Darren, you need to connect, sir.
Do it live!
Darren, hit your call button, or it's wanting you to connect.
You know, we could just talk about him without being online, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, that might, like, get him to... Pay attention, get up quicker.
That Cousin Darren. Yeah, we can say all kinds of stuff about him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there was a Dark Star Orchestra show, I recall.
Darren was very fascinated at the marquee that night. Couldn't get enough of the marquee.
Yeah, so he's going to learn how to hit that calling button, surely.
I think he's there. I think he's confused at how it works. It is rather confusing. Cousin Darren, are you there from Scottsdale, Arizona? Earth to Darren.
Yes, I am. Hi,
there he is.
Just floating around out there in the ether world for a little bit.
Yeah. Cousin Darren is also a fellow intrepid traveler and oftentimes co-pilot to the starship that is the Dead Show of the Month. A longtime listener and supporter and frequent guest on our show. In fact, I can tease that Dead Show of the Month number 175 that's coming up will feature Cousin Darren as a guest in studio for that as well.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, woo.
So, Darren, we are here tonight on Dead Show of the Month Live talking about everybody's first Grateful Dead experience. And I know you have one of those, so tell us about your first show. Where was it? When was it? And this will make everybody laugh.
Well, when was it? A little bit of a question mark. Where was it? Was it that amphitheater? Gosh darn it.
Compton Terrace?
Stevie Nicks' dad owned it. Yes, thank you very much.
Did we lose him? Oh, we got him back. Your wireless fidelity is acting up, Pork. Or something. Do you still hear us? Uh-oh.
Ruh-roh.
Uh-oh. Darren.
I'll pretend I'm Cousin Darren. Yeah,
Darren
so
is missing an action.
In the middle of the desert, because what else is out there in Phoenix except the middle of the desert? I guess you go a little past the middle.
I hear Bob now.
All right. I'll stop pretending I'm you.
You guys are messing with me.
Are you back, Darren?
I am, again.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm filling the space. There was... blank space.
Are you guys done? Fuck. Huh? Okay. Yes, it was out at that Compton Terrace. Out at. Are we here?
You're having. I don't know if you're at the fringe of your Wi-Fi, Darren, but you're cutting in and out, and that's not normal for this software. So you might want to find
right by my phone. Let me move in a little closer to the center of my galaxy. How's this over here? We all connected?
It works.
Good?
Yeah, I hear you. Right, so yeah, your first show was at, you were at Compton Terrace.
Yeah, the date is unknown. I'm not really sure of that. Because Gus, who's from Philly, I was exposed, and I know I've mentioned this before, Das from Philadelphia, up in Flagstaff. My buddy Stransky was going to NAU up there, and had met Doss, and he had been to a bunch of JGB shows and Dead shows. Gave me my first tape from Cuyahoga Falls. So I feel like the I had gone a little bit earlier than that 87 show, but anywho's that ticket's lost, but the memory of the experience out there. I remember driving out, and we had some party favors, you know, to really help this thing go along and kick up the entertainment value. And I hadn't really been exposed to the Grateful Dead a whole lot. You know, I'd heard Truckin' and Touch of Grey and shit on the radio, but I didn't own any albums. And another buddy had come home from high school, or I'm sorry, from college, a high school friend, and we all went over to his house, and he had kind of gone through some changes. All of a sudden, you know, his hair was longer. He was wearing fucking colorful T-shirts and shit. And I was like, whoa, man, what's this guy been up to? You know, and he's listening to some weird music and this Oxa or something album he's raving about. And, you know, we're all going to. We're going to go to the show. I didn't understand what it was. Very confusing. And I was like, oh, right on. Cool. You know, sounds like it's going to be kind of weird. And I'm down with that, you know. So we all pre-partied and then headed way out into the desert to the show, and wandered on onto the premises. And I was like, holy shit, you know, there's a bunch of freaky looking people here, dirty hippies and shit. And, you know, I'm Darren from Scottsdale, and you know, I got my fucking penny loafers on, and a, you know, a polo shirt and a pair of blue jeans and some psychedelic fun in my pocket and shit. And now we're like, okay, well, I guess this looks like the place, and wander on in and find a spot, and the band starts tuning, and they kept tuning, and some mumbling started happening along with the tuning and shit like that. And, you know, I guess the show had started. I didn't understand any of it. You know, it was just really odd what was going down. I was like, well, I was not getting any of it. Don't understand what's happening, but I kind of like it. You know, I'm entertained. And it kept going, you know, more mumbling, more fucking playing, a lot of like the, I don't know, turned into the, all kinds of weird shit. They're like, I'm saying, just didn't really comprehend any of it. And then there was a halftime, and that was weird. You know, all of a sudden everything had kicked into full gear, and it was like, "Ooh, hey, I don't know if I should just camp out here in a little safe zone or wander around." And so we wandered around and checked out the scene, and you know, heard more of that weird tuning stuff. Like, okay, everybody's kind of wandering back to the playground here, and we go back out, and dude, it got weirder when it got dark. All those colorful banners that were hanging next to the stage, and the light shining on them, and a little bit of wind blowing, and the weirdness got even weirder. And I liked it. I'm not gonna lie. I was like, I think I found my place. These are my people. I dress a little different, you know, but these are my fucking people. I think I finally found what I was kind of looking for.
And, without even knowing it, yeah.
Without even knowing it. And thank God I didn't do what my buddy Eric had done when he first saw him. He got separated from his friends, and they found him in the backseat of a Cadillac heading off to the next show. And they were like, dude, hey, you don't know those people. Get out of that car. You know? you're not going there, you know? So... everybody, yeah, I guess has a kind of a weird experience for their first time. You just don't know what you're going to get. And, either you like it or you don't. I went back, and I didn't go back enough times. A little after that, I started a family and whatnot, and kind of just stayed near the home base, Vegas, Arizona. Never saw him in California. Always found that kind of, yeah, always found that kind of strange. But I always just kind of bounced back and forth. Vegas was always fun. I got other stories for another day about Vegas. Those are
we could do a live stream on just Vegas stories for all of us, I'm sure, and they would all be different, even though we were at various stages of our lives. It sounded like the experience you had at your first show was really good. How much were you looking forward to see the Grateful Dead after that first show? Did that become an obsession?
Oh yeah, I wanted, things are a lot different. Things are a lot more available now than they were then, and I wasn't connected to a lot of stuff, and so it was hard for me to, find out when the next event was going to be, and when the circus was rolling into town, and unfortunately, there was time it was like, hey, dude, the Dead just played, what the fuck, the frustration. That one got by me, but lucky enough to, to see a couple of handfuls of shows, and I'm sure more than that. I haven't counted them, and somewhere like 15, 18 shows, not a whole lot. I'm enough to say I experienced a lot of good fucking times.
Was there anything that scared you at your first show? Did it get scary at all? It got a little scary for me.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah, dude. Yeah. That I didn't know what that beam was, It got real heavy and I could feel the music pulsing inside me. And it's like, whoa, I don't know what that is up there. And there's a lot of weird noises and shit happening up there from these little people that I see up there. It just seemed like there was more going on up there than could possibly be happening with. It's confusing. It's still confusing to me to this day. I still don't get it. What kind of magic and alchemy they're working up there on that stage. And I'm still mesmerized.
Magic and alchemy. Nice.
Yeah, dazzling majesty. Darren, cousin Darren, I should say, from Scottsdale, thank you very much for calling in, man. It was our pleasure hosting you. You were caller number two, sir.
Yeah, right on. Sorry, can't tell you much about the show, but,
I got plenty out of it. How about you, Bob?
You told me a lot about that show.
Okay. Well, good, because that's par for my course of memories of shows. I don't really remember much, but I had a really good time. When I left, I was smiling and like, I'm going to do this again, and I learned a little bit more as it went on. I'm happy to say. I just, I really could have used a tour guide of some sorts to here's what's happening. But I enjoyed it. The mystery and the confusion, I think, added to the whole excitement of it.
Yeah, live music is something else, and live Grateful Dead music's even better than something else. Good stuff.
Well,
thanks for your call, sir. We look forward to hosting you at episodes in the future. I know Darren's always got things to say and always got a story, and Bob, cousin Darren's stories are usually good.
They're always great. It's such a pleasure, and I look forward to sharing time together in the future as things evolve in our situation. Yeah,
we've definitely evolved. So in the spirit of live radio, quote unquote, we are going to take a quick break and play you guys a tune and give Bob and myself a moment to get some drinks of water and maybe hit the potty, and we'll be back right after this song. You guys hang tight.
It's potty time.
The Dead Show, the Mike Podcast.
Well, everybody loves themselves some Althea. We know that to be a fact. I don't know any deadheads who don't like Althea or love Althea. Joining me back on the line is my co-host Bob. How you doing? You back?
Yeah, hey, and speaking of first, I got to see the first Althea in concert.
Yeah, and I noticed you also got to see, someone's got some feedback going on, you also got to see the first ever show with the Tiger guitar. That's pretty cool. And for those of you that aren't longtime listeners, Bob has been to some epic shows. Bob went to Closing of Winterland, Bob went to English Town, he saw Keith and Donna's last show, he saw Brett Midland's first show with Tiger. My goodness gracious, am I missing something? The last great New Year's show in 1990, of course. It just, wow. Wow stuff.
I loved it all.
My first show experience was way different. And we might as well go into it. For all of you guys listening out there, hit your call button, queue up on hold. we'll get to you. You are welcome to leave chat messages or give us a call. We want to hear your tale, and in the meantime, we'll tell mine. And as I alluded to earlier, Bob, I didn't know anything about the Grateful Dead when I stumbled upon them. Hmm. And what I did know about them, I'll be frank with you, I didn't like. I knew I Will Get By. I knew Driving That Train High on Cocaine. I knew the Doo-Dah Man, and I didn't know much more than that. A buddy of mine actually called me out of the blue and said, hey, I bought 10 tickets to the Grateful Dead show. Help me get one of these. And I straight up told him no. I had to be cajoled and convinced to go to my first Dead show. I was not into it at all. I was he rather easily convinced me that there would be one hell of a party going on there, and that definitely piqued my interest. It was when I arrived, and by the way, getting there, we crammed into one vehicle. There was 10 of us from Chino, which is where this show originates and I still reside. We pulled the seats out of my buddy's mom's minivan, and we went down to Carson, California to see my first show, all 10 of us. And when we got there, it was quite bizarre. I had never been searched going into a parking lot of a show, but they wanted, yeah, the parking attendants wanted all of us to show our tickets, prove that we had tickets, and it was interesting.
Okay.
It was interesting. That was a first. And we get in there, there's this giant, it was an amazing spectacle. There was like a dirt parking lot, which was different than anything I'd imagined. There was a lot of things that I couldn't imagine. And right away, I could tell that there was something different going on that I had never been around. The people, the sights, the smells, the sights and smells of the people, all things that were very new to a suburban kid from Chino, California, with little or no interest in the Grateful Dead. And within probably a half hour of being in the parking lot, I could tell that whatever was happening was really cool, because they were very accepting of me. And Darren touched on that, you know, wearing his topsiders and his polo shirt, they still made him feel welcome. And I can tell you that it was the first giant scene that I ever really felt welcomed into. Eventually we queued up to go up this long dirt path to this, where this concert was going to happen. That at this point, I won't lie, I could have just hung out in the parking lot all day and had myself a great time, but I was actually being cajoled to go into this concert. And also another thing that weekend, Bob, I know you went, did you go to both shows that weekend or just the Cinco de Mayo?
Oh, both shows. Yeah, we were at both shows.
Okay. Well, a lot of people have told me that it was really hot that weekend.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't notice. I don't know if it was because I was 16 years old or overly stimulated, but I didn't notice any kind of weather situation going on. They kept saying it was really, really hot. And once we got into this giant soccer field, I'm so glad this was my first show. We've all seen our share of shows in arenas and stadiums and amphitheaters, but this was a big soccer field with a stage at one end and some concessions that I didn't notice until damn near the show was over at the rear end, and a massive swath of people. We found ourselves a good spot on Jerry's side, probably 150 feet back, you know, spread out a blanket, and the 10 of us really, you know, kind of settled in and waited for whatever was to happen to happen. And then there was the rush of excitement, Bob, as you know, will happen when the band walks out. And I remember thinking, wow, that's Jerry Garcia right there. I could see him, and I was, that's where I kind of got excited. Like, wow, that's a legend right there. And he's right up there 100 feet from me. I don't know if I'm the only guy who gets like that when I go to concerts, but it is kind of weird being in the presence of people that are famous, even if you're that far away.
Yeah. Well, I think an appreciation of art in general makes us respect those who can produce it.
Yeah. Well, they produced it. So the first set, my first set experience was much like Cousin Darren, what he described. I heard the band come out and tune up. The tuning decisively got more and more weird sounding. I was wondering how long they tuned up their gear for. Things started to get a little sideways for me. I won't say that I got a little bit scared, but I started getting kind of nervous. You know, something, these weird noises were starting to get to me, and I didn't know what was really, where it was going, what was going to happen. I found it to be very odd. And then it stopped, and they put down their instruments, and they walked off stage, at which point, right, I asked my friends, you know, what was that, the sound check or something? What's going on? And they informed me that it was intermission time, to which I giggled and said, what do you mean intermission? They didn't play any songs. And then I was informed by some of the more non-sideways, understimulated folks in my group that, no, they had indeed played for over an hour, and there was plenty of songs in there. I had to reconfirm there was music, like words in there. Yeah, there was words in there. They sang songs, man. I had no idea. It was, what are you going to do? But the second set was a lot better because they started out with Iko Iko, which was a song that I actually knew. So I had some kind of comfort zone there. And I started to realize that this weird sounds combined with this song that I knew was producing this tremendously huge boogie is the only way that I could really describe it. I became more in tune with what was happening on the stage. The big boogie, as I call it, that Iko Iko produced was fantastic. And I was really excited at that point. You know, okay, you know, now I get it. Now I understand what's going on. There's a big boogie going on. I understood the dancing. The clapping during Iko Iko was all very easy for me to digest at that point. They played The Wait a few songs later, which I knew from FM radio, and right. I was blown away. You know, here's this a slightly less intense boogie, but it still was there. And I just enjoyed the crap out of it. I won't lie. It really grew on me during that second set. I wasn't nervous anymore. The heat didn't seem to be bothering me anymore, and we kind of just went with it. Good stuff. It really good stuff, but intense pounding boogie. And I didn't know that the Grateful Dead had three drummers, Bob. So that was kind of interesting for me to discover that day. As I looked up at the stage, the cymbals seemed to be reflecting fire of some kind of fire on the stage that I couldn't see quite from where I was. I couldn't see the source of the fire, but I saw flames on the drums and, you know, the two guys sitting at the drums. And then there was a third guy who I'm pretty sure at this point wasn't there, playing those big drums behind him. And I quickly, a couple of days later, learned that the Grateful Dead just had two drummers, which was still one more than I was used to, certainly.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. And then, you know, at some point during the second set, the only guy who was with us that day was my friend Brian. The only guy in our group who had actually been to shows before. And reminded, I was 16 years old. This guy was 16 years old. So he was the experienced hand. And at one point, he kind of tapped me on the shoulder and said, you don't look good. You need water. And at which point, I recognized that I hadn't drank or ate anything whatsoever since, like, breakfast at home in Chino. And I didn't even recognize that there would be a place to obtain water. So he guided me very gently, the tour guide that Cousin Darren said he wished he had. I guess I had one. He guided me back to the concession stand and cautioned me against getting the lemonade that I wanted. He had advised me that would feel very slimy in my mouth, and I didn't trust him. I got the lemonade, and sure as shit, very slimy in my mouth, went back, got a couple of glasses of water. You know, that was interesting. And then we kind of filed away from the concessions, and there was this big group of people, Bob. A big crowd had gathered around in a circle, and as a high school kid, only one thing came to my mind, that there was some kind of combat happening within this circle. At school, when there was a big group of people gathered around, there was generally a couple of people fighting. And even in the even though my neurons were extremely enhanced that day, I still decided that it would be a good idea to go see what was going on in this group. And when I arrived, there was no fight happening, Bob. No fight at all. What there was is probably 20 to 30 fully naked people, men, women, children, all shapes and sizes and ages, dancing their asses off in this mosh pit of nudity and love. I observed that, yeah, it was ever, again, I'd been to a lot of concerts in my time. I'd been to a lot of different kinds of concerts, but I'd never quite seen that. So we kind of observed that. But that wasn't even the weird part of our walk. As I walked on, there was this guy sitting on a blanket by himself, way behind the board, you know, out in no man's land. And he had in his hand this giant crystal, probably 7 inches long, like a shard of crystal. And I recently had purchased a crystal necklace to hang around my neck, you know, the little 1-inch crystal on there. And I was very proud of my crystal. And I see this guy with this, it might have been closer to a foot long for all I know. This thing was huge. And I stopped to inquire, and he had told me that it was full of energy. And if I wanted to touch it, I could. And I'll be damned if when I touched that crystal, it certainly did give off an energy that I will never forget the way that that felt when I touched it. It wasn't like an electric shock. It was more like a vibration, which now in hindsight was probably the three drummers and the 19 bass players that were pretty much overtaking that concert, man.
Well, there were 19 bass players that confirmed.
Yeah.
Third drummer, I'm not sure.
That pounding boogie was a lot of drums and bass, and drums and bass was something that I'd never really noticed at any concert I'd been to prior to that. I was more tuned into the singing and the rock and roll guitar playing. So I was kind of enamored by this bass playing and drumming. So I asked this guy, can I hold that crystal? I'd really like to hold that. And he told me he couldn't let me. And I assured him, buddy, I'm not going to steal your crystal, man. You know? And he's like, no, you don't understand. You can't hold it. And he turned his hand over, and there were grooves in the crystal where his hands had been maybe for, I don't know how long. It almost looked like this guy had maybe never let go of this crystal, and his perspiration, had kind of worn grooves into this crystal. I don't believe that actually, I don't know what I, all I know is I took three steps back very quickly and turned around and didn't run away, but fairly close to running away. It was a little weird seeing a crystal that was formed around a man's hand. And I fully believed him that he couldn't let me hold it at that point.
So yeah, you didn't want, but I gotta say, that's some pretty weird shit all around for your first show. I don't know that I've had that aggregate experience in all of that I've had, but crazy.
Yeah. I do remember the other one. I didn't know the song, of course, but they played another one. And I remember that pounding coming around part, you know, again, that driving boogie from the you know, the whole second set just drove hard for me. After the show, kind of weird. We went back out in the parking lot. The sun was going down. The parking lot seemed hilly all of a sudden. I remember earlier it was this dirt parking lot, and it just seemed like I was walking up and down hills out there, which was myself and my friend Ben were just giggling at the fact that we didn't recognize those hills. And, something's cool. I didn't have very much money. I was 16 years old. I had to pay Joe for the ticket, and you know, bought some water and some slimy lemonade inside the show, and really was upset that I couldn't buy one of those really cool shirts they were selling with the soccer ball and the bicycle velodrome on it. But there was these guys out in the parking lot selling t-shirts, you know, and I saw one that caught my eye. It wasn't the tie-dye work, because it was probably the worst tie-dye work I've ever seen. I think like a sixth grader could probably do a better job. Lousy art, but at the bottom, it's, you know, at the top it said Grateful Dead, and it had the skeleton riding a surfboard on it, and right under that it said, "It's worth the trip." And I had to have that shirt. I mean, that shirt said it all. That shirt said it all. It was a long, trying afternoon of all kinds of weird things: crystals, slimy lemonade, naked people, pounding boogie. But I had to have the shirt that said, "It's worth the trip." It was high on my list. And Joe at the time lived in San Clemente. So we had to drive him back to San Clemente from Carson, and then go all the way back to Chino. And for you non-Southern California people, that's a hell of a haul, man. That's a big triangle, nowhere in line with one another. So I come rolling into the house on a Sunday night, Monday school, dad's waiting in the living room for me, asking me where the hell I've been. He knew I was going to a concert. Didn't really figure that I would be gone before he woke up, and certainly didn't think I'd be coming home well after bedtime. And he was very concerned where I'd been and what was going on and why it took me so long. And I'm not sure I made a whole lot of sense. And I got to give my dad credit. He kind of cut it off, man. I think he cut his losses at the conversation that he was attempting to have to me, and revisited it the next day. And I'm certain I made more sense the next day. Bob, that's my first Grateful Dead story. I was hooked from that point on, dude. I couldn't wait. I could not wait to go see the Grateful Dead again. It was whatever happened that day. I read in Deadbase one time, somebody said whatever glue they used that day was sticky stuff.
Yeah.
Because it became a lifelong obsession for me, which is it was really cool. It was a great day. I'm really glad I did it, and it's really shaped who I've been. It's been 31 years this month since that day. May 6, 1990 was my first trip.
Yeah, thanks for sharing
to the show.
I mean, that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, well,
pretty funny.
We all have stories, and you know mine's always going to be long and detailed. You have to go eat dinner, don't you?
I do. I need to log off here and go on, but you know, I see Jane has wants to call in.
Yep, that's Dorothy Jane. That's my girlfriend from San Dimas. We'll get her on momentarily.
I'm sorry, we should have had her on already, but
I saved her knowing that you were going to have to step out, so I figured maybe she could keep our folks company for another couple of minutes, because she hasn't seen the actual Grateful Dead, but she still has the stories, Bob, interestingly enough.
Oh, yeah. I look forward to sharing time together at other shows again.
Yeah. Right. Well, you have a good night, sir, and thanks for being part of Dead Show of the Month on a monthly basis and the live program. We need folks like you to make the wheel turn.
Yeah, cheers, everybody. Have a great night.
You have a good night, sir. So coming up next, we have Dorothy from San Dimas, who is my lovely girlfriend and someone who has been with me on several journeys with the Grateful Dead, kind of. So how are you doing tonight, Dorothy? Welcome to Dead Show of the Month Live.
Hi, thanks. I'm doing well.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, enjoying your guys' chats.
Yeah, interesting as always. Interesting as always. We're trying to pull the live thing off. We've never done it live, and we're doing it live.
Do it live!
Yeah, Bill O'Reilly's about it, too.
Right.
About it. So, Dorothy, you're a little bit younger than myself, and you did have opportunities to see the actual Grateful Dead. Ooh, we got some feedback going on there. Anyway, you did get to see the Grateful Dead. Let me back up a little bit. That feedback kind of threw me for a loop, and feedback tends to throw me for a loop. But you haven't gotten to see the Grateful Dead, but once you started dating me, you got to go see perhaps the next best thing. Yeah?
Yeah, for sure.
So I definitely tell us about your first show. Tell us about your first Grateful Dead experience. Doesn't even have to be with the Grateful Dead. See?
Well, I mean, I don't even know where to start on that. Because, you know, I've got my favorite. That would be, you know, up at last year in San Francisco, that 72 show. I enjoy that a great deal. Getting introduced to that in Monterey was like one of my favorites. You know, technically, I guess my first one would have been in your living room. And so, you know, I'm really bad with which ones we watched when and where.
I remember that one. So I'll help everybody, all of our listeners out with it. That happened to be the Downhill From Here Alpine 89 video for which you were very well prepared to watch. And what'd you think?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a great deal. you know, and I continue to enjoy it. I find it amusing, like, two bands I really loved and like their favorite songs of mine ended up being Grateful Dead songs. The Counting Crows, you know, Friend of the Devil. That's like my favorite Counting Crows song. And then Sublime's, Scarlet Begonia. So, you know, it's interesting that it took me so long to actually listen to their music. My initial impression was a bunch of drunk people. And that's probably because I became aware of them more towards like the 90s.
Right.
And so, yeah, it just seemed like a headache. I'm like, if I want to see a bunch of drunk fools, you know, I'll go hang out with my friends. And so,
not as many drunk fools earlier. Yeah. Bob was the lucky one. And maybe even Darren, those early 80s were, you know, Grateful Dead was kind of off the beaten path. So you got turned on to the Grateful Dead with the video, oddly enough. And then I started dragging you around to Dark Star Orchestra all over the state of California. And then I started to recognize that I really wasn't dragging you anywhere.
No, I've enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a great deal, for sure. Like I said, last year in San Francisco when they played that 72 show, that was just that was the best thing I'd ever get to actually seeing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand. And I feel the same way as a fan of the Grateful Dead for years and not getting on the bus, as they call it, until 1990. There was a giant swath of their career that I wasn't privy to live. And so Dark Star Orchestra, God bless you guys, because you're enabling folks like myself and people like Dorothy, who never even saw the Grateful Dead, to really enjoy the experience and really take a bunch out of it, which is, you can't beat that. And it's cheap. And there's not a whole lot of people, and there's not too many drunk people.
No, no, no. And it's definitely interesting each show you go to, man. That one in Ventura, that girl, man, I was just like, you go, girl.
Yeah, that was interesting. There was a girl who was kind of doing that floor moves that breakdancers used to do on the stickiest beer sticky floor. I wouldn't have touched anything in that venue without
if you dropped it, it was gone. Yeah,
gone.
The floor, yeah, it was gone.
Yeah, you're not, it's not a 5 second rule in place at that place.
No.
Yeah. So all of our listeners out there, interestingly enough, Dorothy actually came on a full West Coast tour with me last year. She saw 5 shows in I think 8 days.
Something like that.
It was a test. I told you it would be a test. It would prove your mettle, you know, for sure, to be able to endure that much travel, that much live music, sticky floors, other things that we don't need to talk about that you got to witness. And I apologize for that, but I didn't do it. We met some cool people, and that was the most fun thing for me on the tour was when we got to San Diego, a show that I almost didn't want to go to because I was worn down, and it turns out it was a really good idea for me to go to because we got to meet some really cool people, and you got to enjoy that portion of the Grateful Dead experience. Prior to that, you kind of stuck with the people that you went to the shows with. You had your gang, but that night it was fun watching your deadheadness blossom and interact with other people and form the little mini show friendships that all of us have come to love over the years. And you got that experience.
For sure. That was an awesome show.
And
we
both
dragged your asses out there and then came back all energized.
Yeah, that was, I barely made it. I almost didn't make it out of the house and was about to pass on that one. And we got there and they had Phil Lesh's bass, Mission Control, that the bass player Skip was playing, which was cool. And then they started the show with Terrapin. And I was thinking, wait a minute, this could possibly be one of my favorite Dead shows they're playing. And it was. They played 22677 that night, which is definitely one of my Desert Island Grateful Dead shows in the recording arsenal. I can't say that the show in person was maybe as great as it could be. I understand there was a lot of Hell's Angels at that show. Being in San Bernardino, the Angels kind of ran that town. So interesting stuff. Dorothy, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your experience and getting all these folks out there that are listening a chance to understand that you didn't have to see them before 1995 to be a deadhead, because I'm fairly certain you consider yourself a deadhead at this point.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I and, you know, in a sense, I'm kind of lucky because I get to listen to like all of these eras and different stuff. And you know what I mean? I don't have to wait for what's going to come next. I've got so much to go through and look at, you know? And so, it's just, I've enjoyed it for sure.
I'm so glad for that. You have a good evening, ma'am. I will be in touch with you later tonight. Okay.
I'm sure you will. I'll talk to you later, Dave.
All right, mama. Okay. So we're coming to the end of our show here. We've been on for about an hour. I hope you guys got a taste of what Dead Show of the Month Live is going to be like from here on out. I want to thank Bob, my co-host and intrepid traveler, again, the Jedi master to my Padawan learner when it comes to Grateful Dead stuff. And I most of all want to remind all of you guys about our monthly show that comes out on the first of every month. And it's called, accordingly, the Dead Show of the Month. You guys can tune into that. We take a trip through the years every month. No one knows what's coming, and it's always interesting. If you want to get a hold of myself or Bob offline, you can hit us up at deadshowofthemonth@hotmail.com, or you can check us out on the Facebook at www.facebook.com/DSOTM podcast. You guys, the next time we do a live thing will be after the first of the month. We'll get together and hopefully have a discussion about that month's show and about the year that show came from, because Dead Show of the Month number 175 comes from a pretty famous year, a year that a lot of deadheads consider to be their best year. I have continually fought against that. I don't believe, I have a differing opinion from a lot of people, so it should be some fun and lively conversation is what I'm looking for, as always. It's good stuff. So you guys tune in then. We'll let you all know. And for my co-host Bob, for Gus from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, cousin Darren from Scottsdale, Arizona, and little old Dorothy Jane from San Dimas, California, this is your old friend Dave saying so long from Chino, California.
The Dead Show of the Month Podcast.